Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
So Tyler, no shock. Looks like we're likely headed to a Pillars four-way match, a Double or Nothing. Despite the what will be a three-week journey, getting us back to where people presumed we were going to end up anyway. What did you think of the follow-up to what felt a bit convoluted in terms of stage one of the mini tournament last week?
Yeah, I mean, I would say not a roller coaster of emotions, but maybe like a kiddie roller coaster, you know, like at the county fair or whatever, where it's like not, you know, you can put it on the back of a truck, but you know, I thought during the match, I was interested to see what they would do with Jungle Boy and Darby. That was intriguing. I liked that aspect of it. They're sort of, you know, allyship, but not like each other. I thought something could happen there. And then the match played out kind of a paint by numbers way that you would expect it based on how the story's gone. So, you know, wasn't a huge success for me. And then, and then just getting right back to where you're going to be, it felt very, you know, this whole, since last week, it's felt very WWE-like, and that's not necessarily a negative, as I think AEW can use to some WWE style of storytelling that they haven't employed, but it felt a little bit like that, what we see on Raw especially a lot of, hey, here's the thing you kind of know is going to happen, and we're going to, you know, string it along until next week with something, you know, what the result's going to be, and I don't think that's the greatest way to tell a story. So overall, I think it's not a failure, but just kind of us spinning our wheels for the last 3 weeks to what we thought we were going to be, as you alluded to. So overall, not a success in my mind.
And obviously the goal here is we got some weeks of TV time to fill. How are we going to do it? And it's not so much the concept as much as the execution. Not that the concept doesn't have flaws. You know, also, I mean, just the no, like, I mean, I've been like not happy about having to defend my defense of last week's opening segment, but I've been willing to, in the sense that I think it's okay to like two people who don't like each other. And so, you know, when Jungle Boy and Darby took some digs at each other, I didn't think their digs were all that off brand. You know, Jungle Boy has some friends in high places, but they liked him enough to bring him along. That's not like a big indictment. And Darby's a bit of a loner, and maybe Jungle Boy shaded it a little more negative than he should have. This week they circled back and apologized, but there's still tension there because they're going to be wrestling each other. So, well, they're going to be teaming first, have to coexist. But then they'll be wrestling each other, trying to win a world title. I still don't have a huge problem with any of that, even if I, you know, would have probably changed some of the wording if I got a hold of a script or talking points at a time. But all that said, my bigger issue is that everybody just seems okay with the notion that you can just buy your way into having a challenger job for you on purpose, take a dive for you on purpose, and that they're doing it out in the open. Like, you know, the NBA can't, like, players or coach can't pay off a referee in front of everyone and go, well, what can we do about it? Like, no, you can actually do something about that. That's not okay. If you're paying a challenger to take a dive for you, Tony Khan should strip that champion of the title and hold a tournament. And I'm not saying this is like they really should do this, but that would be the logical result of a champion being brazen enough to, on national television, strike a deal with his challenger, interfere on his behalf to make him his challenger. And then how's AEW supposed to sell the pay-per-view if we're buying it? Why do a storyline of people won't buy into it? So the notion, well, no one's going to buy into it, so it doesn't matter. Well, if no one's going to buy into it, don't do it. But if the idea is you want everyone to kind of buy into it and get pulled into the drama, it don't make any sense. Why would you pay? Why would Tony Khan be okay with all the things he steps in and you know, counters? Not a ton, but even here, oh, I'm not going to make it a one-on-one. I'm adding a tag match tip to it. Why would he be okay with that? And go, yeah, everyone pay $50 or whatever for the pay-per-view, even though the main event's going to end with one guy lying down and letting the other guy fingertip, you know, put his fingertip on the chest and pin him. It's just, it's preposterous. It doesn't make sense. It's the type of booking that drives me nuts, which is, wouldn't it be cute if we did this even though it makes absolutely no sense. It makes the announcers look like fools for just sort of being like, well, this doesn't quite seem fair. And Renee's like, well, that was a pretty fair price. Like, we're all acting like this is normal. It's not. It's not okay. It's farcical. And it undercuts the foundation of everything else. I think MJF's performances have been good, but it's not a main event world title storyline that I think can work, Tyler.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you 100%. It feels like something, again, to kind of reference WWE here, it feels like something R-Truth would be doing with the 24/7 title.
Yeah.
To retain it more than the AEW world title. And also, to your point of, if it's not believable, don't do it. It's like the main event. We've seen it many, many times in the last couple of weeks with the Elite and Blackpool Combat Club. But, you know, I don't think Kenny Omega is going to literally murder Jon Moxley with a screwdriver.
I know.
So that whole thing, it's the same sort of, you know, it's different families, but they're at the same family reunion, I guess, is a bad analogy there. But, like, you know, we know that's not going to happen, so why do it? And, you know, you've got your famous Scott Hall line that you've used lots of times that, you know, don't think you're going to kill someone because you're not going to.
Yep.
So, same thing. You're not going to pay off a guy. You're not going to have a main event of Sammy and MJF. And they even had to do the, you know, the thing with Sammy and MJF get in the car to make you think that Sammy's not going to play ball. But, you know, I don't, it just, the whole thing. Yeah. It just at best is what is like, oh yeah, we know this is all kind of farcical and doesn't matter, but that's a bigger problem in general with AEW and pro wrestling when you get to that point and it's not successful ever when you do anything like that. So yeah, I think we're in alignment.
Yeah. My favorite part of the show is just MJF and Sammy gushing over each other, kissing each other's forehead. Just two heels who can't trust each other. They know they can't trust each other, but they're each trying to convince the other person that they are trustworthy, and they think they might be getting away with it. And then MJF just goes, oh, not room in the SUV for you, Sammy. Now, if I'm MJF and they've just thrown this twist into my storyline and I care about my world title, I might allow Sammy to get in the SUV with me. I might not reveal the friendship is not authentic and sincere this early. So when I say it's my favorite part, like, I think just it was funny. But at the same time, if MJF's this mastermind, which, you know, the storyline does not, I mean, it's too farcical to take seriously as like this master plot being carried out. But I guess, you know, MJF's being proven right in the sense that the promotion's doing nothing about it and the announcers act like this is okay. But to reveal that Sammy's not really his best friend and he can't hitch a ride with him in his SUV might seem counterproductive to the con that MJF is playing with the stakes being high. So, yeah, even my, quote, favorite part, which is just, you know, the how brazen it was for MJF to be like, nope, not room here. It seems like he should be doing that after he gets what he wants out of Sammy.
Yeah, I agree. And, yeah, just to set up next week, you know, I think you do that if you have a match between MJF and Sammy to make it seem like Sammy won't lie down for him. That's the route you go if it is a one-on-one match. And that is somewhat intriguing. But, yeah, to have it here and just fully forecast what's going to happen is not very smart by MJF, I would say, in character.
Yes, yeah. But it's safe to predict we're going to have a Four Pillars match coming out of next week's tag match. How do you think they get there? Is this just that Sammy and MJF ultimately don't get along, and that's kind of why the SUV thing happened, because it's a way to explain why Sammy actually will turn down what will turn on MJF and basically realize he's probably never going to get that money, and that will cost them the match, which will cost Sammy the one-on-one match that he sort of quote-unquote earned these last 2 weeks. But it will also the lack of cohesiveness with them, which is MJF's fault for showing his hand this early, will lead to Darby and Jungle Boy, despite also not being best friends, winning. But, of course, I'm answering my question as I ask it to you, but I assume Jungle Boy and Darby also won't get along particularly well. There'll be something that happens that also leads to tension between them, because you don't want to go into a four-way match with two heels and two faces, with the faces getting along and the heels not getting along, because then it feels like the heels have a disadvantage. So there'll be something, some misunderstanding that only happens in situations like this. But there'll be a misunderstanding that one of them will act unreasonably outraged over something that is a mere happenstance that should be written off or maybe check the tape later. We'll get all the tropes and cliches that we shake our heads at next week. I hope they step up their game and do something a little more clever. But that my question to you is my scenario what you would have said had I actually thrown to you instead of answered my own question?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, the interesting thing to do here is, you know, you know, he gives Sammy the ring, and Sammy turns and uses it on MJF, and MJF gets pinned by Darby and Jungle Boy. That would actually give credence to the segment you liked last week where, you know, Sammy's the heel, but both Darby and Jungle Boy have respect for him in some strange way. And that would kind of be the weird use of his character that's kind of ebbed and flowed, you know, in the whole course of AEW of being a heel and a babyface, and him kind of sticking to his guns and standing up for himself. If Sammy's the one to do that, MJF gets pinned, then you can also say that MJF is beatable because he was pinned. So, you know, that would be the brave thing to do. And I think it's more just, you know, Sammy and MJF don't get along, it's Sammy gets pinned. So hopefully it's something more brave, but we'll see.
We're a month away from needing to have this discussion, but do you have an early prediction on how that four-way match goes? Is it just kind of straight up lots of action and then MJF wins, and it's because at that point he still thinks Sammy will help him? Maybe, I mean, because they got several more shows after next week to sell the idea that maybe MJF is going to pay Sammy to help him retain his title, even though the odds are stacked against him, and then that back. I mean, but my point is, the expectation is MJF retains the title, or do you think there's a chance one of those three actually comes away with the title, and then we get a rematch somewhere down the line on a different event?
Yeah, I would say it's close to zero. You know, we'll go a couple decimal points to the right of zero on MJF not retaining in that match is where I would be right now. But you know, from the match itself, we'll see how they book it. But I can definitely see even MJF in that match while like feigning an injury and coming back at the end, like we've seen many times in wrestling, and getting the win at the last minute and having all three of the other competitors battle each other out, him being the smart heel who didn't even get, you know, worked over in the match, is kind of the way I would see it going at this point. And him pinning a Darby, seems like him and Darby have been the most likely to have a one-on-one confrontation when this started. So him pinning Darby would make sense to me, but yeah, MJF retaining for sure is my pick at this moment.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've got lots of emails, a couple of people on hold. We got Javier Machado joining us later as an on-site correspondent. We have a lot more to get to and more topics to cover on this show, including an angle with Takeshita having to make a choice. Well, asked to make a choice, and then he hesitated, and he paid a price with a screwdriver. So we'll get into that. Jade Cargill's latest title defense against Taya Valkyrie. FTR's Dax against Jeff Jarrett, which I did not think I would be saying in 2023, was a national cable TV match. Orange Cassidy back defending his TV title, which AEW cutely calls an international title, but it's a TV title. And more. So let's pause and quickly and formally introduce the show, and then we'll get to calls. We've got Carlos and Mark up first on the phone lines. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, April 26, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch. Started as a newsletter back in the late 1980s. I've been covering wrestling 35 years. I started as a teenager. I'm not that old. And also launched PWTorch.com in 1999. And I host a variety of podcasts, including this, the Wade Keller Post Show and the Wade Keller Podcast. Those are free. Yesterday, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net joined me on the flagship. We talked about the latest dust-up with CM Punk visiting Raw. I had some news on that, some insight on that situation. Jason and I broke that down. We also talked about the new WWE World Heavyweight Championship title and the WWE draft and much more, including some thoughts on the Four Pillars storyline. So if you haven't checked that out yet, check it out, download the show, and listen. It's always great when Jason joins me on the flagship. You can search Wade Keller on your podcast app, and this show, the Red Logo Show, the faux shows, and also the Blue Logo Show, the podcast, will both show up. Subscribe to both, and you are set. You can also enjoy interview classics. We're putting up on the Blue Feed tonight my interview with former WWE creative team member Kevin Eck. We talked about WrestleMania 34. Got Kevin's take on that. He provided some behind-the-scenes insights from having worked in WWE behind the scenes, including the night Undertaker streak ended. And very fascinating, near the end of the show, he talks about Vince McMahon. And this is before Cody sort of was a co-founder of the movement that led to AEW, and way before, of course, he returned to WWE. Kevin talked about Vince McMahon's opinion of Cody and his prospects of being a main event single star someday. And Kevin knows exactly what Vince thought of him. because he was in those conversations. And so I encourage you to download that show and listen. It's in the final segment of the show. It was previously part of the VIP exclusive portion of the show, but when we do our flashbacks, we include the VIP exclusive after shows. So there's an enticement to go check it out. It was really interesting listening back to that. I remember Kevin talking about it back in the 5 years ago when we first had the did the podcast, but it was very interesting listening back given the context of where Cody stands today. So we have a lot to talk about tonight, and the other voice you hear who started off the show is Tyler Sage. He is a PWTorch.com contributor. In fact, he covers AW Dynamite on Wednesday nights. His reports right alongside mine on our main listing at PWTorch.com. So you can get two different perspectives on the same show, and we pick up on different details. And so I encourage you during Dynamite, same thing with Raw and SmackDown, to check out PWTorch.com for multiple perspectives on the TV show. Tyler, welcome back to the co-host chair. Great talking to you again.
Hey, good to be here. Excited to talk some Dynamite tonight. And yeah, thanks for letting me join.
Absolutely. Do you want to plug your Twitter or anything else? YouTube? Any of that?
Yeah, sure. Maybe you can follow me on Twitter at Ring of Tyler.
Yeah.
And the YouTube channel, PW Torch, is the YouTube page, so youtube.com/PW Torch. Yeah, lots of content there. Myself, Zach Hador, and Stephanie Chase are the team there mainly, and previewing and talking about wrestling as it happens throughout the week. And Zach and I have our flagship show on Thursdays around 4 p.m. Eastern called Fireside Chat, and we talk about all the biggest news of the week on there, and lots of great content on the YouTube page to supplement all the great stuff over at pwtorch.com, including Wade Keller getting scoops about a meeting this week ahead of everybody else. So that was exciting to see. So good job there, Wade.
Thank you, Tyler. People, if they watch live the Fireside Chats on the PW Torch YouTube channel, they can interact, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. They can comment. And, watching live, comment, get your questions in, just like this format, but with video. You can see our faces. You can see my male decor in the background and Zach's posters, his band posters, and his hat. Sometimes he doesn't wear a hat. It's very,
that's right. That's right.
On the chat. So and you can comment about my hair. So there you go. All the good reasons to go to the YouTube page and see what, if you always wonder, hey, what does this person look like? Because you know what Wade looks like, obviously. But, if you don't know what I look like, it's always, one of those things when you listen to a podcast for a long time, you're like, oh, that's what that guy looks like? Okay, that's something. So, you can go there and do that.
And sometimes you look different. Like, is that Tyler? He looks different than a week ago. And, with Zach, if he doesn't wear a hat, it's like, who's that guy? Oh, he doesn't wear a hat because he's losing his hair. And why does he wear a hat? Some people wear hats because they don't have hair. Zach's got lots of hair. Anyway. All right.
Yeah.
Stop our banter here and pivot to the people on hold and our conversation here about AEW Dynamite tonight. So rather than waiting longer, let's start taking calls. If you want to be a caller on the show and you're live streaming our show, you can join Mark and Carlos on hold, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. That flags you on our switchboard. That lets us know you want to be on the show. That's 347-215-8558. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. If you want to live stream our show, by the way, we put links up on our TV reports at pwtorch.com. In my TV reports at the top and bottom, there's a link to the live stream. You can also go to wadekellerpostshow.com. And find the link to the live stream. I usually put a link up on Twitter, but I was just running behind on Dynamite and didn't get to it. But normally on our Twitter page, there's a link also. So lots of ways to live stream our show right after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Within 5 minutes, roughly, we go live. So if you're downloading our show, but you want to get an instant reaction and perhaps join the conversation by email or phone, that is the way to do it. All right, so as noted, Carlos, you're up first, and then Mark will be up next. Carlos, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about tonight's Dynamite?
Hey there, Wade, Tyler. Nice to talk to you guys again.
Yeah, I'm glad you called. It's good to talk to you again.
I would just like to preface everything by saying that I'm not a casual viewer. I'm not even, a recurring viewer. I usually just keep up on Reddit or by listening to you guys on these pods. And I feel like I'm pretty well tapped in to the current rosters of the different promotions and things like that. And my question is, like, was this Roderick Strong debut telegraphed in any way? Because as far as I know, he was injured in NXT, and now he's on AEW. So if you guys have any insights to that or what they're going to do, are they going to bring back any of the other Adam Cole faction members, or Riley and Fish? Just want to know you guys' insights to that.
Yeah, so, I mean, Roderick wanted out of WWE last year. He asked for his release, and it was denied. And then there just wasn't a lot of news on him. There was some talk of him working behind the scenes. They just didn't have a role for him on air, and I think he wanted to wrestle. I think I saw – I'm trying to think if I saw him post to social media recently. But nevertheless, yeah, no, I don't think that this was teased at all. Bobby Fish was let go, and Kyle O'Reilly was dealing with some injury or health issues, and I mean, hopefully he can come back. But I don't, I'm going to have to brush up kind of on the latest with them. I'm not even all that, honestly, all that crazy about Roderick Strong joining up with Adam Cole. I think there's a little too much in AEW of, hey, if something happened elsewhere, we're going to drop it in the middle of the AEW universe and act like everybody knows and is excited for it to happen, which there are situations where that's called for and others where it's sort of like, eh, don't do it too often because you don't want to assume knowledge from all your viewers, and you also don't want to leave people who didn't watch NXT or don't know Adam Cole's history to feel left out. So I don't have a strong feeling on it, but I'm kind of ambivalent. I mean, Roderick's talented, but I don't know that him aligning with – I mean, some people are going to be excited about it because, I mean, he's talented, he's good, and he and Cole have a history. I'm not, like, dogging on it. It just feels like a bit of a pattern with AEW of if we can sign anybody from the other group, we will, and it's sort of the sugar rush of the moment, and then they just sort of, you know, end up kind of where – Tony Nese is, or where half of these people end up, where they don't get consistently pushed. Tyler, you can add anything to any of that.
Yeah, so I'd say on Fish, he's with Impact right now. I think he signed, so I would not foresee him coming back in any capacity. And yes, he got let go, I think, for a reason. Not like he did anything wrong, but yeah, I think he's just like not a good fit for Tony Khan. But and then, yeah, I thought this was going to be O'Reilly tonight when, you know, it was Cassidy and Bandito come out and it's still 3-on-4. I was like, okay, I think I'd even seen a Adam Cole tweet about missing Kyle O'Reilly. And I was like, okay, this would be a good time. I think he's on that show, the All Access show. So I thought it was going to be him. And then some music I didn't know. And then the Roderick Strong stuff came. So yeah, not telegraphed in my mind, but yeah, I could not agree more with D. Wade about things in the past. You know, Jay White and Juice Robinson come to mind when you bring up this exact sample of things that have happened elsewhere that were better elsewhere, and now you get the watered down version that's just not as good, not being a good recipe in my mind. But Roderick Strong did have a better debut than Jay White, so that is something.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing.
At least from a storyline perspective, right? So.
Well, and from a ceiling. What's his ceiling, and did they undercut it? You know, that's the issue. No one's thinking Roderick Strong is going to be the centerpiece star of AEW, but Jay White is like, if they don't just merge him into the Speed of Traffic and treat him like just another guy, you know, he's not getting pushed all that much different than Tony Nese was. And mm-hmm. no dig to Tony Nese, but, you know, come on, this is Jay White. You've got to keep your foot on the pedal and make everything about the fact that Jay White signed with you and make people think this is one of the biggest things that's happened in AEW history. And you get little lip service from Excalibur, and then he's just another guy. He's talented, but he's just another guy. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, Carlos, back to you.
Like I said, I don't watch very often. I'm on the West Coast, so I kind of get the short end of the stick when it comes to watching things live. Also, my work schedule, you know, I work Wednesday to Saturdays, so I miss Dynamite, I miss SmackDown. When I do have a chance to watch Raw, I'm usually with my girlfriend, and she is a wrestling fan. She's watching the past, Attitude Era, things like that, but she's not super interested in it. So when I have time with her, I'm not going to, you know, take time away from us to throw on Raw, throw on some wrestling. It's kind of a thing I just watch on my own. It was a thing I watched with my brother. Growing up, I called in a couple weeks ago to Raw. We went to Raw after Mania, You might remember that,
yep.
Wade. You might not.
I do, yeah.
But,
no, I do.
Thank you, Wade. Thank you. It's just one of those things where it's like right now I tuned into Reddit. I saw Rutter's song debuted. I'm like, I don't remember seeing any release from him from WWE. I don't remember seeing him sign anywhere else. He appears here. I watch the videos, and it looks pretty lackluster to me, honestly. I'm watching it. I watch him come out. The announcers seem kind of perplexed, but they don't really know what's going on until his name appears on the screen. And then when he comes out, the fans are kind of, their reactions are kind of subpar when it's supposed to be a debut, when it's supposed to be a save, things like that. And I'm just, like you said, does this already put a ceiling on Roderick Strong? What is his ceiling, and where do they go from here? Because if they're bringing Roderick Strong in, and they only have the possibility of only having, who is it, O'Reilly, right, because Fish is gone? What are they going to do? What is this story, you know?
Yeah. Tyler, what is Roderick Strong's ceiling, to use the word of the moment? It's certainly lower than Jay White. It seems like does he do something with Adam Cole but then end up in ROH? Like, that could be a path for him.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you want to be, like, the most generous to Roderick, I would say that him, you know, matching his NXT run, you know, he was North American champion, so that would be, you know, international champion, or a trios champion would be his peak in AEW from a ceiling standpoint, if that's how you measure that. But, yeah, ROH feels right. They even mentioned Excalibur on the call, said he was a former Ring of Honor champion, so that makes sense with his pedigree, and to kind of establish, like, an ROH legacy group versus some young up-and-comers would be a good strategy within Ring of Honor. But, yeah, I mean, some sort of role of working coach, like Madison Rayne was, you know, I don't know if she's still doing it, but her role, what that was supposed to be, where you're probably going to lose a lot on television, but you're more of a coach backstage and you're kind of transitioning into the next part of your career is how I would think his career is going to go at this point. But, you know, I could be wrong. Maybe Tony Khan is a huge, huge fan and is going to push him more than I think he will. So we'll just have to wait and see. But I think there's certainly a limit there, and him with Cole limits Cole more than it raises Roddy up, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm with you on all that. Carlos, anything else you want to bring up?
No, that's pretty much it. Just if you guys have any insight as to why Dax Harwood versus Jeff Jarrett was on this card today, that would be great. And also why Jeff Jarrett won, aside from the Sanjay Dutt stuff. But it's just like the whole stuff with the FTR is going on, and one half of FTR losing to Jeff Jarrett, pretty much a fossil, someone who I never watched because, you know, I started pretty late in WWE. I've certainly watched my fair share of TNA and WCW retrospectives and things like that. And a lot of people don't have good things to say about Jeff Jarrett. So I'll just leave it with that. You know, I listen to all these pods, and thank you guys for, you know, doing what you guys do.
Thanks, Carlos. And you're officially in the club. Do you know what club you just got yourself into?
Not what
you,
is that?
You for, do you know what I'm about to say? Tyler,
no,
do you know what club
honestly,
he's now in? No, I'm asking Tyler if he can predict now.
No, I'm going to butcher it to just say it.
Okay.
Yeah, Jeff Jarrett is famous for putting people in this. Yeah.
No. Not Carlos, you're in the club, and there's a lot of people in it, a lot of people I really like who are regular callers, who I go, do you have anything else you want to say? And they go, no. And then they say several other things. That always happens. You are now officially in the club.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be a part of this illustrious club. As illustrious as Bullet Club Gold.
Perfect. It's like we arranged that ahead of time, even though we did. Thanks, Carlos. Call again. We'll talk to you soon.
No worries. Thank you, Wade. Thank you, Tyler.
Yep, you bet.
Thanks.
I love it. Love it. Anything else you want to add? No. Here's a couple other topics. It just happens so fun. I love it. I'm always smiling when it happens.
That's really... It's really the Jeff Jarrett of it all, isn't it? That's kind of his whole career, right? Hey, Jeff, you got anything else to do? No, but let me beat Dax Harwood.
By the way, people like Jeff. Like, the wrestlers like Jeff behind the scenes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Jeff's just like, he's Jeff, from what I hear, he's so, like, looks at Tony Khan and all, you know, his circle of people, QT and Sanjay. He's like, yeah, I did that. It's your turn. I'm going to sit back and chill and watch you guys deal with all the stuff I had to deal with before. I mean, the reason Jeff's going to push is because people like him. He's helpful. He's just, like, likable. Like, I mean, he's not in management anymore. He's just, it's like the weight's off his shoulders. And he's, you know, he and Dax went out there and did, first of all, I don't know that it belongs on Dynamite. Like, it's not a match, with all the respect to both guys, who I have tremendous respect for, it's not a match I'd put on Dynamite if I'm trying to improve viewership during a time when viewership's down year over year. I just don't think the storyline support is there for it. But there is a storyline, but you have to watch Rampage to be up on it, and even then you might not be all that invested or care about it, because I think people already see FTR in tag matches, and I think they think maybe Jeff Jarrett should be a special attraction, but not somebody out there this regularly on TV with so many younger talent that represent more, you know, looking into the future than Jeff in his, you know, mid-50s. He's a nostalgia act at this point, and I think there's more value in him being selectively featured than featured this often. But they did a lot of just little things well. I mean, I'm watching, I'm like, okay, these two are going to put on a little bit of a clinic where you could air the match in the locker room to point out to some of the younger guys. You probably didn't notice this, but see what he did here when he was selling this move. See after he executed this move what he did to fill a little time so the wrestler could sell and not have to pop. Like, just little things that they do. And I've seen better examples of it. This wasn't like some classic match, but I'm like, yeah, I find Dax and Jarrett and a handful of others in AEW refreshing, because there is something about the pacing and the precision. Precision is the wrong word. The pace, I just was going for alliteration there. The pacing and the kind of the veteran savvy of how to get the most out of doing the least. And so there's things I admired about it, but I wouldn't have booked it on Dynamite. Tyler, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, not that I'm here to solely defend it, but I mean, it was a top half match, right? Of six matches, it was definitely in the top three of quality matches on the show tonight for lots of different reasons. And that should probably not be the case when you look at the talent on the card and you have Jeff Jarrett, you know, there, but you know, they do a lot, him and Dax do a lot of things well together. And I'm sure Jeff will be on the Saturday show if that does happen. He seems like a guy that will be collision bound and work that sort of style of show. But I think it was well. You know, is that the most important thing right now? No, but do we also need to see a Wardlow squash match for the 10,000th time? Probably not as well. So I'd rather see that get five more minutes, Dax and Jeff Jarrett, than that whole segment. So yeah, I mean, for someone that, I think pre-AEW, I was way more down on Jeff Jarrett in general and sort of his management role and in the ring career combo. I've been pleasantly surprised, and I think he's been used well. And, you know, do I want Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett going for the tag titles probably at the pay-per-view? No. But, hey, they've made a choice, and this is a way to set that up without hurting FTR as a team when they get the eventual win. So from a bigger picture standpoint, I think it's a good use of Jeff Jarrett if you're going to use him.
I don't have enough of a sense of time to know when the Wardlow squash matches started. I could think for a minute and probably backtrack my way to when it happened. But if you tune into Dynamite after not watching for like 9 months, you'd be like, that guy got a haircut and he's still just squashing people? What's going on? You know, and I know they added Arn to the mix, and just Arn's peak on promos was almost 40 years ago. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I just don't know that there's a lot left that justifies putting him on TV. And I mean, he's out there, you know, I don't know. It's just, there's a little unpredictableness from him too, in terms of, you know, the language he uses and the gestures and, you know, go take an ice bath and have a 12 pack. It's like, he's a professional. Oh, never mind. It's just, I'm kind of overarmed. I'll enjoy his glory days, but I don't think he's helping the Wardlow act, and you know, he's going to turn on Wardlow, and I don't know. It's just not. My tone says it all. But I appreciate you bringing that up, Tyler. Anything you want to add to that before I move on to Mark? Yeah.
No, I mean, it depends if we talk about it again. If not, we can get it through here. I doubt we'll get any callers on it. But, you know, Arn saying what he said about Wardlow very much reminded me of the Drew McIntyre, you know, circa 2011 Vince McMahon line of, like, just the kiss of death. to give someone that those sort of credentials is just never good for anybody. So, but yeah, it was not good. And we'll see if we talk about it again. But if not, you know where Wade and I stand on that. So there you go.
And I, for a second, I thought Aaron was plugging the WWE draft because he goes, the draft is this week. Oh, the NFL draft. And also, there's nothing ironic I was searching for. What was ironic about there being an NFL draft this week? And I don't know what was ironic about it. Do you? Aaron said it's ironic.
No, it was just, I think you just didn't know, you love someone misusing words like that. And I think he's in that club. If Carlos is in the other club, he's in that club tonight. So.
yep. Sounds good. All right, we got Mark from Long Island up next, and then Scott from Long Island on deck. It's a Long Island night here. Mark, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, Wade and Tyler. First off, I apologize in advance. My fiance is about to walk in the door, and my dog's probably go nuts. So I apologize if that does happen while I'm on with you.
No need. We welcome dog barks in the background. It happens to me.
So two things. First thing, I feel like I'm the only one who remembers the Inner Circle and that MJF tried to become a part of the Inner Circle, and that was the reason Sammy Guevara left the Inner Circle, and that them being best friends now, usually AEW is good with remembering things that happened in the past, but for every reason this they forgot about, and am I the only one who remembers this?
You are the only one who remembers it. I can confirm it. I just checked Google, and Mark is the only one who remembers it. Was that long ago enough, Tyler? Should the announcers be acknowledging it? Did that cross your mind, Tyler?
I don't know. I feel like they're both such, scummy heels that they're going to turn on each other anyway. So to bring that up just shows that that's going to happen even more so than you already know. So it's kind of that whole thing we talked about of like, well, why do it if you know what's going to happen is so obvious in front of you. So, I think maybe some allusion to it, maybe Renee bringing it up in an interview would make sense to, for people that have been watching for maybe the last year only and would want some context, but it doesn't bother me a ton because that storyline was kind of a mess from start to finish as well. So it kind of just continues the storyline of MJF stuff not working tremendously well from start to finish, just kind of being rosy in our minds. But yeah, I don't know. If I would, but I certainly remember it. And I think there's two heels that are so up and down that it doesn't really matter. And that's just an AEW issue more so than anything. I just don't expect them to do it is, I guess, where I am right now.
Yeah. Mark, what else?
Second and last thing, I want to get off before the dog starts going crazy. The Owen tournament. I know last year Adam Cole got injured before anything could really become of him winning, but do we expect this to be like a thing, like a King of the Ring, that like you get a world title shot? Like, where do we think that this annual thing is going to go to? Is there a purpose to it, or is it just a memorial thing, or is there a greater purpose that's going to become clear in the future going forward? And with that, I'm gonna hang up, and but thank you guys both for what you do, and if you can, go VIP.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it. Good topic. Tony Khan's announcement, not overhyped this week, so credit to AEW for that. Make at least what I saw, they didn't make a real big deal, build anticipation for it. But I thought it was, it's a good appearance from Tony to just lay out the Owen tournament's back, and it's going to be in Canada, and the finals are going to be in Calgary. The Owen tournament is nice. It's part of AEW's brand identity is, we're the good guys, and WWE and Vince McMahon are the bad guys, and, Owen Hart's widow does not want WWE talking about him or doing anything, but he's someone who deserves a tribute. So the origin story of the tournament is nice and fits with the AEW brand. Doing it every year and not having parameters or a prize other than belts that you get, it doesn't excite me. I wish that there was I don't want it to be like this sort of preliminary tournament with only prelim guys, on AEW Dark or anything like that. But it'd be nice if it was something where it's like a Future Stars tournament. There's somebody with some sort of connection to Owen or a similar background to Owen, and they want to find, you know, eight wrestlers who fit the definition of Owen Hart when he was a rising star in Calgary and just doing things no one had seen anyone do before in the ring. And you know, so anyway, I mean, we could brainstorm and come up with different ideas, but I wish there was some, so I hope there, I shouldn't act like this, that's not going to happen. I hope that there's some parameters around who gets to enter, who's chosen to enter and why. And it's not just sort of this draw a name out of a hat, random assortment of main event and semi-main event people who sometimes, you know, like, I don't want it to just be like, you know, QT Marshall and trying to think of a good random example, Claudio and then AR Fox and Pac. Like, it's just, I'm trying to think of like the four most random names I can come up with. Like, don't do that. Make it mean something. So anyway, Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to continue year over year. I mean, we saw Tony Khan in a suit, and that I don't think I've ever seen him in a suit.
It looked, first of all, he's really rich, and it looked expensive, and it looked tailored, and it looked distinct and fashionable. I'm not like Mr. Fashion, but I thought it was a good look on him. He didn't look like Justin Roberts trying to be like a ring announcer. It looked like something would be comfortable, but also formal.
Yeah, and I think that just shows like his respect for, you know, the family and for the foundation, all that stuff. So I think it's going to continue, you know, in perpetuity. But the one thing, you know, I agree with everything you're saying. I also, even this, you know, this year's, it's going to start at Double or Nothing, if I have that right, and then it's going to end on July 15th in Calgary. If I have anything wrong, please let me know. But that's way too long for a tournament. I remember last year's too was like, it was like, hey, there's two matches this week, and then like 3 weeks later there'd be two more opening matches, and just getting some sort of format of it being a little tighter, I think would help it feel more important. And yeah, I mean, not having it be for a future title shot or whatever, but yeah, someone that embodies the spirit of Owen would be good. And it, how do you quantify that? I don't know. That's hard to do, but I think tightening it up and having it feel more like an event within a, you know, like a branded Dynamite that's focused on Owen, as opposed to, hey, here's a random eight random matches over for 12 weeks is not the way to do it. But, you know, I think they'll tweak it as needed.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you on that. It should feel like it's taking place in a set amount of time, and it's not just some matches are deemed tournament matches. So, but we'll give them a chance to do it before we, like, you know, critique something they haven't laid out yet or bury something that we imagine they're going to do. But we are hoping we can wish it into existence, that there's some thought put into it and it doesn't feel totally random. All right. Our number 347-215-8558. If you call, push 1 if you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. We are anticipating Javier Machado giving us a call soon from attending tonight at the home of the Florida Panthers for Dynamite tonight. But first, we'll move to the home of the Islanders. We'll go to Scott, who is from and on Long Island, calling from – I'm trying to get the words right. Hey, Scott, how you doing?
Hey, you're never in an island. That wouldn't be comfortable at all. You're on an island.
Yes, there you go. Yes.
Speaking of that, by the way, Wade, I know our key demo, but we're both, you know, down 3-2, home on Friday night. So I just hope, you know, I'll be at my my game, biting my nails. I hope you get someone else to cover for you, and you can watch a game, and we look at Game 7. So I'll just leave it there because I know the key demo. But let's go on Friday night.
I love game sevens, especially when your team is down 3-2. I really love game sevens.
Well, my team was down 3-1, so I'll be extra nervous for that one. First of all, Orange Cassidy has made the international title the second most prestigious title in the company, and they have like 26 of them. It's really impressive.
He has, yeah. I wish there was something more to get, and I look at this through the lens of not, oh, this is going to be a fun match to watch. I look at it through the lens of, is this going to hold viewers? Is this going to get people excited about the title? Is this going to – and it felt like a match that existed because they wanted to form an alliance, and they kind of worked backwards from there. And so, I mean, Tony loves Orange Cassidy, and the locker room loves Orange Cassidy. He's like you know, just he's a good dude and he's helpful and respectful and doesn't cause drama and all that stuff. And he has really good matches. He's really talented. He's, you know, he looks like he's 25, but he's in his late 30s and he just wrestles like a veteran and a pro. And he's got his cool gimmick that the crowd reacts to, all that stuff. But I don't want to see him have random matches, you know, and I want to see some backstory to who gets a title shot and why. And I was going to say that about the Owen tournament. Like, don't have an Owen tournament. Say the winner gets a title shot. Like, people randomly get title shots. Don't make people go through a tournament. Just give them a title shot like everybody else. So is what was the backstory for Bandido getting this shot, Tyler?
I have no idea. I'm going to be blatant and say it. It was maybe – I didn't watch Rampage. Last week it was on Saturday, right? So maybe it was on Rampage. But,
I
do not know.
I think
that's the problem anyway. Yeah.
Sorry to chime
Go
in.
Ahead.
I think I know.
Yeah, help us
out. No, Tony wanted to see it.
Yep. Exactly. I mean, it's snarky, but it's 100% accurate, I think. I mean, and
yeah,
I thought that.
No,
I'm like,
serious,
so,
yeah.
we got access to Bandido. I love Orange Cassidy. This would be a good match. And that's matchmaking, but it's not booking, you know? I think we need more. But, I mean, the match was fine. It was paced, like, more methodically than I would have anticipated going in. I'm not complaining about it, but it just ended up kind of having, like, a lot of stops and pauses and stuff, which I'm sort of an advocate for, but I was also kind of surprised by it. And I just didn't sense the crowd. It was a great opener in terms of getting the crowd super into it for good portions of it. What was your evaluation of the match, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, I liked it personally for me. I think, you know, Orange Cassidy has a very similar style, working the way he works as a babyface, where, you know, there's the beginning and in the middle he's you know, working to get that babyface win at the end, and he typically does. And usually it's good, but, you know, it's kind of the reverse Miro work rate that he had when he was in AW. And, you know, it was always good, but it was formulaic, which is not always a problem. But, he worked, you know, this style, and they went back and forth and both a grounded Bandido, which Bandido has the ability to do. And it was, you know, especially seeing those commander matches the last couple of weeks, which are exciting, but the antithesis of what you kind of want to see in logical wrestling. So I thought he grounded Bandido in a good way and just showed Orange Cassidy's value to lots of different people. And he worked in different styles. So yeah, I thought it put him on a good footing. And I liked the match a lot.
All right, Scott, what else have you got for us?
Yeah, I wasn't going to say this, but really fast. Like, you just mentioned Miro. Like, it would be, and we all fantasy books, so I'll do some right now because why not? But, like, it would be really nice if, like, all of these matches and him wearing himself out defending because he opens the show 7 out of 10 weeks or something. Like, he's always the first match. And so it's like, yeah, if he's – and his hand is hurt, right? Isn't that the story? It would be great if you hear Miro at a big show to attack him and they, you know. But AEW, Wade, what you said was perfect. Matchmaking is one thing. Booking, an entire different. And Tony Khan is, you know, he's 50%. That's just what it is.
Yeah.
I don't know if you mentioned this. Pulling out a table, doing a 630 through it, not a DQ, but then like giving the other dude a skateboard and falling down, that is DQ. That in one of your I've been off for the last few days, which is like a rarity for me, so I got to listen to a lot of the content, and it's great, by the way. And I don't know where you said it, but it's just
I don't either. I do so many podcasts.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. You couldn't. I mean, my God. Your brain would have to be like big brain. But taking, you know, the disbelief aspect, like that took me out of it because it's just like, well, as soon as he does that, he took it. It's not like it's an announce table like WWE does it. Like, no, that should be a DQ. And then to end it 3 minutes later with the ref not even seeing the second one, the first one the ref was looking, it's like, oh, that's fine. Then they don't see it and it's just, it took me out of it. And I was just like, that's also, it just, it's like an immature move, it seems like, from a company that, the same company that, you know, doesn't book long-term and forgets about Miro for 6 months. Like, it's the same, it all falls in line for me.
Tyler, your response.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, this has felt a little WWE-ish. And again, that's not a bad thing when I say that, but it is a bad thing here. And it felt like a you know, episode of Raw that we are, we know where we're going with this four-way match, and we're going to have this DQ to protect Darby, who's our main babyface in this. Yeah, it just felt, you know, very contrived in that way that WWE can feel with that, that extra third hour. So, yeah, I that was, you know, thank you for bringing it up because we hadn't brought it up either, but it was kind of one of those things that's like I forgot to bring up because it's like so jarring how, you know, that DQ, you could just not do that table spot and save that for the pay-per-view match and not have this conversation, but here we are. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Anyway, Scott, what else for us?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you exactly what, because I know I'm in the club also, but right now I'm going to, I have two more 6-6 points, so I'm going to let you know that. Number one,
Scott, no, let's,
is,
Scott, anything else for us? Anything else for us,
no,
Scott?
No, I'm good tonight. But also, Brian, no, yeah, he,
love it.
Brian Danielson is, and welcome to the club, brother. I love what he does because I know it's, you know, it's like his character, he flips, he was just a face, or a heel, but he's really a guy that I look at and I'm just like, that guy is having so much fun. And when he was retired and like the way he went out, I don't even care if like the character fluctuates too much or if it's too weird as a heel, because like you could just tell that he loves this more than anything and it just shines through him like no one else.
The joy of performance is a big part of what makes me enjoy a segment. You know, like even if booking wise, I've said this, I think Bryan Danielson would help the company more if he was a babyface and more engaged in doing something other than having dream matches or getting to, you know, play act a heel when fans aren't going to buy it. And fans aren't going to buy him as a heel. But your point, Scott, which is if there's another way to enjoy wrestling, which is watching somebody you respect really enjoy what they're doing, that is not a bad consolation prize compared to, you know, what I would say is the ideal, which is just Bryan Danielson being content with being a babyface who fans cheer, even though it's less fun to cut those promos, and finding a way to really be valuable to helping grow AEW. And I don't think that's the role that he's in right now, not at the level that he could be given his stature. But no question about it, whatever he does with his heart in it. And he does so, especially when he has control over it, like he does here, because Tony's going to let Danielson do what he wants. He's leaning into it and having a blast. Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely having a blast, and yeah, he could be more valuable. But you know, the one thing tonight I'm thinking about is, you know, where would I align within the AEW universe if I was a character? And I certainly would be a heel because those points he was making tonight about Kenny Omega were very much in line with what I think, and I was like, "Oh, he's you know, he's trending on babyface moments for me." By
that was,
you know, talking
that was
about
quite.
Talking about, yeah, I mean, it was like you were feeding him lines through an earpiece. It seemed like, but you know, I digress from there. But yeah, no, I think it's just, you know, a time and a place. But I think there was a moment for this Danielson character to be what the most valuable person for AEW and. It probably could be in this exact moment. It was when he went against MJF and, you know, it was not the time for him to win, but him continuing that type of character would be more valuable. And I think in hindsight, I think everyone will see that, including himself. So, but you know, he is having a good time and he is an enjoyable force on the screen when he is there. And that is something you cannot discount.
All right. Very good. Scott, anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah. I'll just add on to the final point. What was funny at the end, he flubbed the word. He said elite instead of Blackpool Comic Club, and the crowd started booing him. But instead of Dolph Ziggler, like, yelling for no sense, he started getting really, like, aggressive how he was talking back to them. And I was like, you know what? That's just a guy who loves what he's doing right now. So is he a better face? Yes. But do I like him as a heel also because he's awesome in the ring and he just loves what he's doing? Totally yes, and I'm happy for him. And it's a great story because – for a number of years, the biggest story, when I really got back into this after many years of not watching this, that's kind of what brought me back. So, you know, I just love seeing it, and I'm happy for the dude. And, yeah, overall, it was – oh, yeah, by the way, that out of all the times I've seen the show and seen Excalibur do those insane runs, that was the most impressive one I've ever heard in my life.
And then the show ran long because I pushed play on my DVR – a minute after the show starts, because it's just easier to pause and rewind as I'm doing the report if it's a DVR, not a live rewind feed on my streaming service. And the show actually ended. The DVR came to an end when the screwdriver was being wielded but not used. So I could just tell, like, they were running a little long. And so Excalibur is probably getting yelled at by Tony, going, "We got to shave 3 seconds off this plug. You know, let's go 0 to 60 quickly here and get through it." Yeah, that was as breathless and frenetic as I heard Excalibur. I don't know how effective it is, but it's one of those, you know, it's entertaining even if it's counterproductive to the goal. Was there a point before that we didn't address? I'm sorry. Now I'm. Oh yeah, I wanted.
No,
I was going to say.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say. That entire run, I'm just thinking right now, I don't know one thing he promoted. If someone was like, "Scott, I'll give you $500, name one match," I wouldn't even know.
Yep.
So was it
That's
productive?
The problem.
I'd say for me, probably not.
Yeah, and frankly,
no,
I mean.
Sorry for
you don't need
on.
To tell us who's going to have a talking segment on Rampage. Like, I just think I think it's time to refresh that approach. I mean, you can put a graphic on the screen and have graphics go by, like, you know, showing who's going to be on the show. But, you know, Excalibur can just more calmly stress the major reason to tune into Rampage is this. And then you can have a little graphic showing some other things, too, instead of just speed talking through it. Tyler, what I was going to ask you is a point that Scott made a moment ago about what Danielson said about Omega, that you're coasting, living off your past glory in Japan, and you know you're joking. That sounds like things that I've said about Omega, and I stand by it. I mean, but it's not exclusive to Omega. It's the culture of AEW booking. It's, you know, whatever level someone's at when we sign them, that's the level they're staying at. And if you know who they are, great. If you don't, it's your job to do the homework. Or listen carefully to Excalibur, spend 3 sentences on it, and that'll be the extent of our character development. That, unfortunately, is just too often the case the majority of the time. But Omega is, you know, I mean, if all you've done is watch AEW, I don't know that Brian Danielson's words don't ring. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, the framing of Darby and Jungle Boy last week was probably less sympathetic than it wasn't fair and balanced, but it doesn't ring untrue either. You know what I mean? Like, Kenny's had some great matches, but the totality of Kenny's AEW time is not, "I have something to prove and I want to win over new fans." It's your pleasure that I'm here and you should enjoy me because I'm a legend with a bunch of 6, 7, 8, 9 star matches. And, you know, there isn't that sort of that hunger to create new fans as much as, "Hey, I'm a star and watch me do my thing." It was a little weird hearing Danielson say that. What do you think, Tyler?
Yeah, no, I agree. That's why I said, like, he was leaning on babyface saying stuff like that, because that's how I feel as a fan. And if you only watched AEW, right, since its inception, and you never watched anything from New Japan or anything else that Kenny Omega's done, I'd be hard pressed to think that you would not be a bigger fan of an Orange Cassidy than Kenny Omega, based on what you've seen in the ring and how much entertainment value he gives you. And that is a big problem. Not for Orange Cassidy, because I think he's been great, but for not just Kenny Omega, but lots of, you know, stars, Hangman Page and the Bucks, and really anyone that's not, I mean, you know, like you said, who's been really elevated from the very beginning. Is it the guys that are the pillars that have been brought up a lot as being those early guys? Like, that's probably it. Besides that, it's people who have been there and they are what they are. So, it rang very true. And it's good. I think you can really be a good heel character by speaking the truth. I think, you know, lots of people have done that in the past in wrestling. So he could be a dangerous heel that is correct, as opposed to a Jericho heel who is obviously, you know, lying and, you know, moving things around to make him sound right. And Danielson's going the opposite approach of being, you know, maybe someone on an opposite political party that is saying something that he's like, "Oh, I actually agree with that. Oh, now I'm very confused. What's going on here?" So that's kind of the character Danielson can be, which I would find very interesting.
I will also add, I think fans, I think Kenny and the Bucks would be better heels than babyfaces by a small margin. And I think Moxley, Yuta, and Claudio and Danielson would be better babyfaces than heels by a wide margin. And I think fans would be much more into booing Kenny and the Bucks because they're just better at it. And I think they're more pliable in terms of how they act and are perceived. And fans just want to cheer Moxley and Danielson, especially, and Claudio. I mean, how can you boo Claudio? Jeez. I just, the whole thing is just, it's kind of a mess. And yeah, Danielson speaking the truth about Kenny, it does feel like, you know, that could be the launch of Kenny snapping, which apparently did after Dynamite went off the air. I got some cryptic message from Javier, so I hope we hear from him soon and get clarification on what Kenny said after the show went off the air, because I wasn't able to figure out what Javier messaged me about. So teaser to stay tuned, everybody. Cool. Scott, any follow-up on that or anything else before you go?
I'm already in the club. No, I have nothing left to say, for real, because that's all. Yep. And you guys have great chemistry, and have a good night. I'm excited for Javier.
Awesome. Me too. Thank you, Scott. Appreciate it.
All right, later, guys.
All right. Yep, later. All right, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. All right, up next, Brian from Boston. Brian, good to hear from you. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hope you guys are doing well tonight. Scott actually brought up a pretty important figure. He said 50%. That's what I felt watching the show. Like, I think the highs were pretty good and the lows stuck. Like, I'll open with this, and I think you, Tyler, you might be especially surprised to hear me say this, but the Jade Cargill Ty Valkyrie match was actually pretty good. I know, hard to believe I would say that, but
Cargill. I'm happy to hear.
Well, she kind of wowed me with that Canadian Destroyer. I know it's not. I know it's not nearly as novel or requires as much skill as it used to. Considering I think Bad Bunny did one, but you know that it's. That kind of wowed me a little bit. And, you know, she actually wasn't too bad. She sold, worked a slower-paced match. Valkyrie kind of got it along. I like the finish of it, too, because, you know, if it was just going to be like a regular Cargill win and then Valkyrie just gets relegated down to Rampage or something, I would have been pissed. But this actually was a smart – it was a smart way to book things, and it kind of keeps the rivalry fresh. And if my – my immediate suspicion is that Statlander is going to make a return for Double or Nothing, hopefully. I haven't really heard an update on her since Meltzer had something like a couple months ago saying she was close, but I imagine they're probably trying to hold off long enough to get a triple threat match at DOM and that's probably where Cargill's going to drop at the Statlander, would be my guess. I was just wondering what you guys thought of the match and about that possibility.
Yeah, I thought it was a solid match with those two. I mean, the one wrestler can't use a finisher and the other can is just kind of stupid silly. You know, why would the company, why the promotion agree to it? Smart Mark Sterling doesn't seem that smart. The joke is he's not that savvy. I don't know. So it just felt, you know, silly, stupid, convoluted. It just feels like a needless layer of something on a match that they could have built more traditionally.
I heard it's not a real lawyer. Did you know that?
the idea of two people having the same finish and battling over it, you can do that, but I don't think you need to start doing it. It was like, you know, the scissors lawsuit thing. It's just sometimes things convoluted than is relatable. Tyler, what would you go ahead and elaborate on the match? And also, if you think Statlander is a good choice to beat Jade Cargill, I don't think Statlander comes back and immediately everyone the AEW fan base is like, all right, now Jade has her opponent. I think Statlander would need 6 months of a different booker who could turn her into a bigger star, because I just don't have faith in Tony being committed enough to someone in the women's division who's been around for a long time, hitting the refresh and really getting behind her and doing something that would actually get people who don't have just an affinity for her historically into it and see that as a big return. I don't think Statlander's character was compelling. I thought it was just kind of stupid and indie-rific. And
I agree.
I mean, she's on the, you know, she's on the top third of like in-ring workers, but I don't think she's just so dazzling and polished and world-class either that like, it's just, she can walk in and be that person. So anyway, Tyler,
What do you think?
Yeah, I like the match a lot. I agree with Bryant that Taya was a good opponent for Jade, and Jade was able to work a match that Taya wanted to work. And the Destroyer, you know, stuff like that is very helpful to have a seasoned pro like her on the roster to do moves like that and help Jade expand. And yeah, so it was just not that typical match, and it was well laid out, and they both worked hard on it. So yeah, that was a really good match. And the finish, you know, if I think an interesting way to finish that would be for Taya to do the finisher anyway, and then have the crowd do the 1-2-3 count while the ref is, you know, DQing her, to then set up another match that makes her more of a viable opponent. I think would be an interesting way to do that with the stupid stipulation. You should take advantage of it if you're going to do a stupid one, as opposed to one that you think protects the babyface and makes them look stupid. So that's my only gripe with the thing. And also not mentioning it till the very, very end, I thought was not helpful for the half the people that don't watch Rampage that were watching that show tonight. So, you know, negatives there, but I thought the match overall was good. And yeah, I'm similar with Chris Statlander, and not to be, you know, negative, but if I'm Tony Khan, I want to make sure she's not, you know, she's injury prone. You know, having two injuries pretty close together that were pretty extreme, I'd be worried about her long term. And yeah, I don't think she's in that right spot. And you have the outcast, you have a groupie of, you know, Ruby, Tony Storm, you have other people, and then you could get Jade could lose to that one of them, and then she could kind of merge into the main event scene and be an AEW original. And, you know, if you want her to be a babyface, you can do that. So there's lots of different ways to go, but I just don't think Statlander, I think people would think she would win pretty easily, and I think it'd be a good way for Jade to get an upset win and build her as a heel if you want to do that too. So there's lots of options, but I don't think Statlander, if she gets it, I don't think that title means much. I think Jade comboing that title is a better move, but that's just me.
All right, Brian, any follow-up on that or a different topic?
Yes. I was listening to the – I forget which one it was. I think it was the podcast you had with Jason from yesterday, where you were saying how they should have built up Tony Storm at the beginning to take the TBS title. I was a big proponent of that. I think, you know, Tyler just brought up the what's their name again? Oh, the Outcasts. Yeah. So cliche, I don't even remember it. But I think if one of the Outcasts is going to beat her for it, then that would be a good way for Toni Storm to kind of get her mojo back. Because Khan really could have done great things with her, but he didn't do as well by her as he should have. And I think actually if you can build her up and have her win the title, I actually think that's a good idea. So Tyler kind of rejuvenated that thought in my mind a little bit. I know second time's not nearly as good as the first, but, you know, better late than never, I suppose.
Well, hopefully the second time is as good as the first if they're going to try to build a Saturday AEW show around CM Punk. And when you're talking about Statlander having two injuries that sidelined her, I'm thinking, well, there's someone else who really should be leery of leaning on two. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, and then I'm not trying to be negative. It's just actually speaking. I mean, he's in his mid-40s and he's got injured twice, and there's all kinds of baggage and issues. And then you add to it the fact that he might not last long before there's another, you know, injury that prevents him from going. But that's another topic for another day. But it did jump out to me.
Well, it's not quite for another day. I'm going to bring up CM Punk. Right,
oh, go
now.
Ahead.
I think he should be either bought out right now or fired on the spot, because if he pulled that stunt with the WWE thing and didn't tell Tony Khan about it, then if I were Tony Khan, I would have fired his ass right on the spot, because that's not acceptable. You don't do that without at least, you know, just shoot off a text to Khan saying, you know, I'm doing this. Is this all right? You know, or maybe we'll do it for a publicity stunt or something like that. You don't do that sort of thing without letting your boss know first. I mean, I just think Punk's, he's not, I can't believe I'm saying this, because, you know, I initially started off in the pro-Punk camp after Brawl Out, as it's somewhat commonly known now. But, you know, given the injuries the guy suffered and the manner in which he took those injuries, one with a plancha, which he shouldn't be doing at his age anyway, and the other with the stupid jumping into the crowd. I just think he's more trouble than he's worth, and personally I think they should get rid of him. Just better he's not worth the trouble. I mean, if he was like 35 or something, you know, like 10 years younger, then I'd say by all means, but he's, in a lot of ways, he reminds me of Tessa Blanchard and the kind of trouble that she's had over the past years, except unlike Punk right now, she's actually, you know, laying low and stuff like that, not doing anything stupid. So it's I kind of see some parallels there. And I just think if you're going to build a Saturday show, never mind the fact it shouldn't be on Saturday, it should be on like Thursday or Sunday. But Punk's not worth it to build around. He's got his body's too soft, and he's more trouble than he's worth. And no, a Saturday show could be perfect for like building up Jay White or something instead of putting him on Rampage. He should have been on Dynamite tonight. So that's just my thoughts on that particular subject.
Thanks, Brian. Yeah, well, Tyler, Tony Khan is a huge fan of CM Punk. And I think, you know, Tony might give Punk more slack because he's gotten to know Punk and understands that Punk isn't always acting in a way where he foresees the consequences of his actions like most people do. And if you believe it's not done out of malice or disrespect, you might give him more wiggle room. And then you add to it, he's a big fan of his and he was a needle mover. I mean, if the situation with Punk's complicated, but Tyler, I'm kind of curious with all the developments with Punk, what is your what's your thinking on this and what Brian had to say, and just in general, what's going on with him and his value?
Yeah, I mean, just for me personally, I think both Khan and CM Punk have lost the benefit of the doubt with me, with Khan being like being able to manage people like CM Punk. You know, I just am going to default that he cannot. On more often than not, and then with CM Punk, you know, I think his intentions are more insubordinate in nature than else is kind of my default on both of them. So that kind of is how I'm looking at the situation. You know, you could totally sell me on Punk is in this meeting and everything's good. The plan is set and then the show is ready to go. And this is his way to get some buzz and get everybody fired up and talking about CM Punk before his debut. But with everything else around it, I don't think that's my default mindset with either, you know, Punk or Tony Khan. So, and then is he valuable? I mean, yes, if you're trying to do in a Wembley show, you know, that big match that everyone's talked about as a potential is there, but it's a very nearsighted approach. The Saturday show is a disaster with or without CM Punk in my mind. From just the stretching of Tony Khan and the ratings he's going to get, et cetera. So, you know, is he a needle mover? I think intermediately, yes. But overall, I think just the era of AEW that CM Punk has been a part of from beginning to end will be looked at. If AEW is around for, you know, 20 years from now, I think it will not be a super high watermark of the company's history. So I think that's a negative.
And if the idea of the big match at Wembley would be Punk and FTR against Kenny and the Bucks, then Dak shouldn't be losing to Jeff Jarrett under any circumstances in the meantime. I mean, I'll just throw that out there. And I don't know the odds of that match happening at all. I just think the rational thought, you know, or rational reasoning of how Tony's going to handle Punk and how Punk is going to act, you can't apply normal, you know, normal rules to it. There's a different dynamic with Punk. I think it was the case a dozen years ago. It was talked about, you know, that Punk's just a little different and handles things differently. Socially is different. And that's it's getting more severe in the unpredictability of it. I don't think Punk's a bad guy trying to do bad things. It's not, you know, he's an adult and it's not an excuse, but I don't think like there's malice or intentional recklessness. I don't think it's heart is in the wrong place, but it doesn't excuse the fact that there's consequences to your actions. And if he didn't tip off Tony about what he was doing, because in his mind he thought it was innocent, even if it wasn't a strategy to create buzz, just the totality of everything. I mean, I don't say I'm ready to move on from Punk. I mean, he's a talented person and he's in the news and all that, but it's like. And he keeps adding things to talk about. But when it gets down to it, I mean, either go out there and cut good promos and good matches and get along and kind of, you know, play the part that you're hired to play and stay out off the radar otherwise on social media or backstage at the rival company's events and at Q&As. You know, I mean, if you have something to contribute, do it, but find a way to lay low otherwise. And I just don't know if we're too far. That might sound naive and overly simplistic given the layers of complication right now in that company when it comes to him. So, Brian, back to you for anything else.
You know, I don't know if either of you guys have ever watched the show Justified, but the main character, Raylan Givens, had a I forget the name of the quote, so I'm kind of paraphrasing here. But, you know, if you go all over the place and all you be is assholes, you're the asshole. I feel that yeah, pretty much qualifies for CM Punk. But
that has been said about him before. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, if the first person you meet is an asshole, it's like, okay, you might have met an asshole. Second person, it's like, oh, it's kind of a weird day. Third person, what's going on here? Fourth person, maybe it's you.
Raylan Givens had a more colorful way of putting it, but
I bet.
The third and final point I'll hit is like the BCC Elite match was pretty good. The storylines for that is great. Brian Danielson is great, so that was definitely a high for me. But a thing that kind of sapped my energy while watching the show was, I should mention Roderick Strong, great in their great segment with him. And, you know, once Kyle O'Reilly comes back, I think that's pretty good. So I like that segment, although Orange Cassidy and the Bandito being in there seem kind of random. But I like how they're building up a Bobby Fishless Undisputed Elite. So, I mean, no, not Elite, Undisputed Era. So I'm kind of looking forward to that when O'Reilly returns. But the thing that kind of sapped my energy on the negative side of things when watching the show was the awful segments. Well, the QTV segments sucked. That was terrible. Hobbs should have just put him like right through the television or something. That would have made it worth it. But the world title picture, I'm starting to think putting the title on MJF was a mistake, because his segments with Sammy Guevara reminded me of that awful Vince McMahon inspired segment with the one that kind of sparked FTR to leave WWE after a while, the one with the naked back shaving in the shower. That's kind of what this reminded me of, because they're acting more like, I don't know, I want to be careful of what I say here, but they seem to be more than just friends, if you catch my drift. And like, I know MJF's playing kind of like the guy looking to put one over on Sammy, but those segments were cringeworthy. It doesn't allow you to suspend disbelief. You just look at this and see, what the F am I watching? So that is... And the match itself between Darby and Sammy, like, as the previous caller, Scott, was saying, that how was that not a DQ with the table? And yet, I know they were paying tribute to Eddie Guerrero with the skateboard segment, but most of the times when Eddie Guerrero pulled that trick, nobody usually got disqualified. He usually won the match by, like, a roll-up or something. It's like, the refs are just morons in AEW, or at least they're portrayed that way. I mean, I have a lot of issues with WWE, but at least to some degree, they don't portray their referees as big as morons as AEW does. And just MJF is just getting too cute with the segments. Like, he,
all right,
the singing thing. Oh yeah, sorry.
I want to throw to Tyler on that. Like, what?
Oh yeah, sure.
Okay,
sure.
I definitely got your point, Brett. Yeah. So, what do you think? When is MJF at his best? That's kind of the question that I don't want to forget to ask. That's kind of come jumping in here, Brent. Is when is MJF at his best and most useful as the world champion top heel? And does this give off – is him eating pickles and marketing a jar of pickles, and I'm not making that up, people, while doing commentary on the main event and kissing foreheads with Sammy and Sammy kissing him back. I mean, I get that I don't see any, like, vibes that there's actual romantic interest in each other. I see that as two heels sucking up to each other in an over-the-top way because they think they're the smartest person in the room, even though the person opposite them is playing the same con. So that's all that's going on there. But is that the right tone for MJF? Is it part of a wide spectrum of things that he's good at, and he's entertaining, and he's unpredictable? He might be doing a song and dance. One week, he might be cutting a serious, edgy promo. Another week, when is MJF at his best, and does tonight fall into the scope of that, Tyler?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, what we saw with him and Danielson is him more at his best. Him and CM Punk having their feud is him at his most useful, right? But, you know, this feels like if MJF were to lose the title and this is his next thing he's doing, this is what this whole story feels like, your post title run where you're gone for a little bit, you come back and you win this feud, and it's just not as important. And it's just portrayed as, you know, MJF's going to win, and here's like an interlude before we get serious with Adam Cole or Adam Page or someone of that ilk before we get there. So yeah, this is not the best use of MJF. This is a juvenile storyline. You know, I think there's things that I find entertaining about it. The match should be good. You know, a four-way match is never the right answer in my mind for any world title. But so it feels more like we've seen a tale of two world champions. And if you take it like the history of AEW, this moment of MJF feels a lot like the entire Kenny Omega run, where it's kind of lackadaisical and goofy for most of it. And you know, the match with Danielson felt very much like, you know, high end, you know, CM Punk is champion, I guess, not really, but you know, Moxley's champion, right? Where the title matters and you're there to get a job done. And it's just a difference of your mindset, right? So I think MJF has value. Him versus Danielson is probably one of the best main event world title stories AEW's told. And this one we're currently in is lower, you know, maybe lower 40% of stories we've seen with the world title. So that's just kind of where we are. It's kind of all over the place.
All right, Brian, any quick closing words? Because Javier has called up and I want to get to him next.
Sure. I'll just end with what I was messaging you about earlier. Looking forward to game 6 between the Stars and the Wild, hopefully with better refereeing this time. And I'm a Stars fan saying that, so...
it's been bad on both sides. And when we talk about wrestling referees and how the solution to everything almost everything that goes wrong in wrestling would be to just have all these referees who are able to run in like randomly and protect another referee from maybe getting, you know, attacked. Why not have them, you know, like sit at ringside or sit in a luxury suite with binoculars and watch the action and then communicate to the referee if they see something? Why in the NHL playoffs can't we take the referees who are not working that night because there's not as many games going on and have them sit in the stands and watch the game with big screen TVs and overrule the referees or at least draw attention to when a wrong call is made that's either out of proportion or out of proportionately too severe, which I would argue the Foligno penalty was, or maybe
was,
not severe enough, which I know you believe the Dumba thing was, and I'd have to go rewatch it. It seems like a lifetime ago, but and then I have the bias, so I'd have to look at it objectively. But the Foligno thing was just like, you know, series changing in early in the game, and a game, it's just like, come on.
Yeah.
That's a
2-minute penalty,
like,
or maybe a double minor. That's not a major.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and I think what Suter did to Kaprizov should have ejected him from like the league. I mean, you just don't jab your stick into the rib cage of a superstar player. But we've always known he was a jerk, you know. And so, yeah, to me, like, when I watch the NHL playoffs, I feel like I'm watching pro wrestling where you could solve the problem, but they choose not to. Because with everything at stake, have 4 extra referees watching the game from all these different angles and have more intervention to make sure that the poor referees were I don't know how those referees on the ice are – they're not – I'm not blaming them. There's way too much going on to follow. But the playoffs are too – you can't have a fan base just thinking a bad Foligno call led to a derailing of an entire, you know, season. That shouldn't be the way the Stars win. It shouldn't be the way the Wild lose, and vice versa. Just let's clean it up. Yeah, that's my
I was I was going to suggest robots, but your idea is better, I think.
Yeah. All right. Cool.
Thanks for taking the call. You guys have a good night.
Sounds good. Yeah. All right. Let's go to Javier, our on-site correspondent who attended Dynamite tonight at the home. Speaking of the NHL, at the Florida Panthers. Javier, welcome to the on-site correspondent portion of the show.
Hey, Wade. Hey, Tyler, how's it going?
Good. So I got to start with this. Good to talk to you. You messaged me and said Kenny went off on something off after Dynamite went off the air. Give me context for that and what you think that was about, because I did not understand.
Yeah, when he right after the we saw that it looked like the show was over. He grabbed the mic while he was over checking on Tagesta, and he basically said, give me 1 second. I wrote it down. Now, I couldn't get everything because the place was not really well mic'd for pretty much anything going on. There was like an entire segment that there was no audio on in the video screen. He called out the BBC saying that now that they got their pound of flesh, they ran away with their tails tucked between their legs. He then said something about Tony allowing the inmates to run the asylum. And since, you know, we're running the asylum, how about we do something? And he mentioned something about getting locked up. And then he said that he's not going to be wrestling the BCC. I'm going to show that, you know, that I can fight too, that I'm a fighter. And that Moxley's, you know, that he's coming after Moxley and Moxley's not going to be able to run away. So it sounds like to me that he was setting up some sort of, you know, I don't know, are we due for a blood and guts match or something like that? It seemed like that's
yep.
that
makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, with that added context, it definitely seems like, but it's weird that it wasn't on TV, but it sounds like something they might air on Rampage or on Dynamite next week going, you know, last week after we went off the air. But it might explain, too, and you didn't hear this, Javier, why Excalibur speed-talked his way through the plug. Like, I know, like, double the normal speed. Because maybe they wanted to get that on the air, and the show was just running long. Because I've heard Tony hates when the show is not timed out right. Like, that's one of his big pet peeves. He's a stickler for that. So I'm wondering if that wasn't meant to be something that made air. But maybe not. Maybe that's just Kenny practicing his promo, or they'll air it next week.
Yeah, I mean, we're probably going to see it. I'm pretty sure because it wasn't. There was nothing like, you know, wink, wink, nudge. It was a promo that people have to see. So I would say either Rampage or Dynamite or both. They'll probably run it, particularly since it seems like it's setting up, you know, whatever is coming up next. You know, which I'm assuming is blood and guts or if it's not just a straight up cage match, because that's the thing. Cause he also, like, cut in, I mean, because, you know, he was emotional. I mean, it was great. He was, you know, he was emotional in the moment and, you know, no ha-ha, no funny business and stuff like that. And it is something I'm sure we're going to end up seeing at some point, but that's pretty much how it goes off. And it's funny that you mentioned the Excalibur thing because while they were setting up a Rampage, Justin Roberts? Yeah, he basically said that you know, when you go home, you need to watch Excalibur's setting of Rampage. It was one for the ages.
Yes. Yep.
So
yep. You got it.
It was actually mentioned in the audience.
So, Javier, tell us about the show. You know how this goes. What stood out to you? What do you think our listeners would like to hear about your experience tonight?
Well, I've been to all the shows they've had down here in South Florida. And this by far was like the most, I don't want to say it was like, I mean, it was a cold, not necessarily cold, but yeah, it's happened maybe, but like it, you know, the crowds were really hot for the first couple of shows that we went to. This was more like what I've come to expect from a WWE crowd. They were happy to be there. We're enjoying the acts. No one really had a superstar reaction. Biggest reaction came from MJF, by far. And then everything else was like, you know, we're happy to see you. It's cool. We're glad people were engaged in the matches. one of the surprising things for me is during the Rampage, they had several Rampage. That's going to be rough. In Rampage, they had several enhancement matches on there, and they were from CCW, and they were well known because, like, you know, the crowd was really into the CCW wrestlers, so it was a real dialed in crowd for that. They were polite, they were attentive, they were like paying attention to the matches, they were in with what's going on, but it wasn't like that rabid crowd where people really want like a person to win and they're really pulling for people. So that was one big like difference I've seen from between the different shows. MJF probably I would put one claimed name. Who would you say second, George? George is here, by the way.
Hi.
He's just kind of sick, so he's having a hard time with his voice.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Roderick Strong was too.
Yeah, Roderick Strong was second, but he was, you know, a surprise that people weren't expecting. So it was a big reaction for Roderick Strong when he came out to make the save.
And Orange Cassidy was also up.
But he was also like the first real, you know, Dynamite act that came out. So Orange Cassidy, Acclaimed got a really big reaction when they showed up during Dynamite promoting that they're coming up on the Rampage. So they got a big reaction, and people were like, you know, they had all like gone to the rail to like, you know, get scissored by them as they're coming out. So people really, really wanted to watch to see the Acclaimed. those were probably the biggest acts. Big pop for Cole when he showed up on camera and said that he was going to be there live. There was a big pop for that, a little bit less when he came out, but, you know, you already seen him. But, you know, for the most part, those were, like, really your top guys, but you can't really differentiate them, except for MJF, who got, like, you know, when he showed up, people were, like, you know.
And there was also a small crowd that started a CM Punk chant, but they were quickly, like, booed.
Yeah, did that come across?
No. Did you notice, Tyler?
No, I don't think so. What part of the show was
that?
Yeah,
get into that. Yeah.
I don't remember exactly when it was. It was the main event. It was the main event. During the main event, there was a section of the crowd. Well, there was earlier an attempt at the crowd starting a CM Punk chant, and then it didn't take off. This one was actually pretty loud. It was a CM Punk. It was CM Punk chant. Might have been during a commercial. CM Punk chant, and then as you know, it gathered up steam. But then, like the other half of the crowd, then started you know booing it down. Started up again, but it didn't take off. But I mean, it was a good 50-50 split of you know of CM Punk and booing him.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't even know what to make of that. I mean, I don't know if I'm Tony Khan what I make of that either. how I feel about that.
And I don't know what he would make because when he came out, half of the people, you know, well, he got a big cheer when he came out, right before Dynamite to hype up the show. He got a cheer when he came out, but then, like, the cheers turned into cheers and half boots. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, speaking of, like, not knowing what to make out, but yeah. So that was the situation there.
Interesting. Well, Tyler, do you have a question for Javier? And Javier, you can always jump in with as we go here with things we're not asking about too, if there's anything else. But go ahead, Tyler.
Very, very small question on Tony Khan. Did he have a suit on when he came out?
Yes.
Yeah, and I don't remember if he had a suit on or not. That's a very weird question.
Or the Panther jacket. Yeah, he just had a suit on during the video, so I was curious if he was wearing that backstage and if he's changed his demeanor attire.
Now that you mentioned when he made the announcement, he was wearing something else. That might have actually been recorded and not when he was there, and not done live is my thought.
Gotcha.
There was some confusion also with Justin Roberts. Because in order to hype up the crowd, some people in the crowd started cheering because I don't know what was going on with the Panthers game. They went into overtime, and then, like, they said, oh, they won. But then, like, people started checking their phones, and it looked like they were still in overtime. I don't know what was going on. And then he's like, no, they're – and there was this huge confusion in the middle of Rampage. We don't know what was going on, during that. So it was really weird. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, not to spoil scores, but yeah, they went in overtime, like probably 10-20-ish. So yeah, during probably the start of Rampage, they had won in overtime. So the Panthers, that is. So, but yeah, I guess, you know, you covered a lot on Dynamite, who's there, who's not. I was curious, like, it seemed the three of the better matches to me had pretty low energy in the crowd. The Darby match, or I mean the, not Darby, the Orange Cassidy match, the Jade Cargill match, and then the Dax and Jarrett match, I mean, it had its normal stuff. But were you, is that just kind of more in line with the crowd and kind of being tepid, as you said, and kind of being more of a WWE crowd that was waiting for spots and waiting for run-ins and things like that, as opposed to just enjoying, like, good action? Is that just kind of trend for you, or those matches were just kind of lackluster for the crowd in your mind?
Yeah, they were into the match in terms of, like, the action. It didn't feel like they had any connection to anybody. Like, you know, them wanting to get over. Mm-hmm. I think the most connection, and some people are going to really hate this, but it's true, is, you know, people were really invested in Cassie getting his hands in his pockets. You know? So that, people wanted to see that. So that people would get, like, upset. When moments like that, you know, were cut off. So, you know, but, you know, outside of that, I think it's a negative thing for AEW overall when people are not, like, identifying with the actual people. Because last time they were here, it was the segment with the guy from the MMA guy, forgetting his name now.
Dan Lambert.
You know. And, like, you know, people, you know, he was booed. You couldn't hear what he was saying because people were booing, you know, so loudly. Or, you know, people, like, you know, engaged with the characters. This kind of felt more, like, polite and, you know, they really did turn on the BCC at the end. They really booed them, you know, vociferously. After the attack on Takeshita, you know, Takeshita was trying to be the white meat baby face and make sure, you know, and you know, trying to keep his, you know, not going as far as the bad guys. So then when they took it out on him, the crowd really turned hard on the BCC. So they were invested in that, but they were more invested in, like, the exchange of presents between MJF and Sammy Guevara. I don't know if that's what you want in a show, you know, if that's what people most invested in. It felt, you know, when it came to the matches, it was more like, you know, it's cool, we're watching this, it's enjoyable, they're doing, like, great stuff, and it's more like, you know, that kind of, you know, appreciation of it. You know, you had a couple this is awesome chants. It's more that level of appreciation than it was, like, you know.
Yeah, the only action that the crowd was really into was mostly Orange and Bandido. And, like, maybe the table spot with Sammy Guevara. Outside of that, everything was just kind of, you know, middle of the road.
Yeah, I mean, again, it wasn't like they were hijacking the show and, like, disinterested in going for a bathroom break. It was more like we're watching the show and giving. I've always felt like the South Florida crowds are kind of like the Japanese crowds, where they'll watch the show politely, give you a polite clap, and then clap at the end kind of thing. So that's kind of what it felt like. Like, they were engaged in what was going on in the match, but not really, like, emotionally engaged. More like, you know, when you watch, like, a really good acrobatic display in front of you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can say it's a regional thing or a city thing, but I mean, as a wrestling promoter, you want fans not popping for moves and comedy. Those are bonuses, but at the core, you need them reacting. You want them emotionally invested, like you are in a hockey game when you're cheering for your home team to win, and you think the stakes are high, and your reaction when something goes wrong is, oh no, this is going in a direction that I care passionately about in the wrong direction, not haha, you know, or wow. Dazzling spot. That was awesome. And you don't want, you know, that can give a false sense of security to a booker because they're getting a crowd reaction, but that's not a money drawing sellout buildings, you know, approach. But again, not to make too much out of, you know, one night when it just, but you know, this was not a show full of matches where you had people who you would expect to care passionately about who wins and loses. I mean, the main event was a foregone conclusion. The opener was random. Jarrett Dax, it's like, okay, you know, we want Dax to win, but do we even want this match? you know, even Jade and Ty Valkyrie. It's not like Valkyrie has this like great bond with the audience. And so I don't know. It was a weird show in that way, you know, Javier. I don't know. Tyler, go ahead and comment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that, but I'm curious for Javier and, you know, Fort Lauderdale, don't get me wrong. It's like an hour drive from like downtown Miami. Do I have that right? It's pretty far distance away, right? Like where you guys were tonight versus South Beach, let's say. Okay.
From where we live, it's more like a little bit more north Miami. So it's like maybe it's less than a half hour drive, like 25, 30 minutes.
Yeah. Give or take traffic. It could be 30 minutes to 2 hours.
That's kind of my question. Yeah. It's kind of my question is like, do you think it's the same crowd that you would have gotten down if you were at the, you know, where the Heat play or, you know, where those have been on Miami's campus before? Do you think you'd have the same crowd reactions tonight, or is this crowd just a little bit more that suburban WWE crowd that is kind of going to have the same reaction tonight? And, or do you think it's just the product of AEW, you know, if you had to guess?
It's usually hard to tell because the thing is that, like, for example, during one of the commercial breaks, Justin Roberts, you know, he asked that question. I go, oh, do you guys call this Sunrise? Do you call it Fort Lauderdale? And he didn't get much of a reaction. But then he's like, oh, how many of you people are from Miami? And, you know, that got a little bit more of a reaction. So, you know, there were some people from Miami. Now, whether they're the same crowd that have been to the previous shows, it's hard to tell. For me, the only thing that's kind of, you know, telling a little bit would be, like, the shirts that they're wearing. Because I've always noticed that, like, if you go to a WWE show, a good, you know, 70 to 80% of the people are wearing wrestling shirts or wearing WWE shirts, as opposed to an AEW show. An AEW show, I want to say, like, maybe 50% of the people, 60% of the people are wearing wrestling shirts, and most of the time it's, you know, it's a good number of WWE shirts and, like, a couple of, like, Bullet Club shirts. This time I felt it was, like, even less than that. Like, I didn't see that many people, like, a crazy amount of people wearing wrestling shirts. I did see one wearing a WCW, a high-voltage tag team shirt, though.
That's awesome.
Wow. How long has that been in the closet? And what drawer did they find that in? Yeah. Wow.
It looked pretty pristine, so it was pretty well taken care of.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you were a fan of High Voltage, you don't want to wear out the T-shirt and have to, you know, donate it after a couple of years. You got to save it for wrestling shows 25 years later. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Javier, anything else from Dynamite you want to share of note, just in terms of your reaction to what happened, and then also anything else off air before or after the show related to Rampage or you know, pre-show stuff, anything? Yeah, just you know what we do here.
Let me see. This is more question for me. Did Orange Cassidy always have the half-ass pyro?
Ooh. I don't know, but now I'm intrigued because that's a great idea if that's new. But yeah, I didn't notice either way. Tyler?
I don't know. Now that you say it, it was there tonight for sure, but
yeah,
I cannot remember.
Idea.
And that totally fits that we wouldn't even notice because that just fits the character so well.
Yeah.
So,
one of the highlights of the show, and I don't know if you got to see it, Javier, is after Renee did a backstage interview with – who was it? Who was before Orange, the opening promo? Was it Darby? Or,
it was Adam Cole, right? She was talking to him, and then he
got it. Yeah, so he walked off.
Yeah.
So she interviews Adam Cole about what's coming up later. Exactly. And then the interview's almost. And then as soon as Cole walks out, Orange goes, "Oh, you waiting here to interview us?" And Renee's like, "No, I was talking to Cole because you know this, that, and the other thing." And Orange's like, "Oh." Okay. And then he just walks away. It was just great. And then Bandito just joins in and goes, "Oh, okay," and walks away too. And I got a kick out of that. And yeah, just someone wandering in thinking the interview for them, and it's not. And then nonplussed response was awesome.
Yeah, we got that. That got a reaction from the crowd too. The crowd popped for that. It maybe just was where we were sitting, but the audio was like really rough to to hear, so I had to go with the crowd with that night piece. I thought was funny. So the crowd was that RJ City who got beat up by Bullet?
Yeah.
Yeah. Big cheer when he got taken out in the crowd. what else? And what I found weird was when want to make sure this is not Rampage. When Taya Valkyrie went after Aubrey, the crowd was cheering, which is weird because Aubrey's usually really over when she's down here.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. This is just quick. My philosophy is if wrestlers are beating up non-wrestlers, you should never treat that lightly as just a punchline, even if crowds pop for it. If wrestlers attacking an interviewer or a referee should always have ramifications. I just think you've got to have some semblance of structure and rules to that type of thing. And it just feels like, you know, amateur hour, cheap pop time when you just treat that as a laugh line. And there's a little too much of that going on. Same thing with MJF, you know, writing out a check to name his price to completely sabotage a world title match. And Renee's like, ha ha, got his money's worth. It's like, no, it's not funny. Mm-hmm. It's the world title. You got to protect the seriousness of it. And referees and interviewers shouldn't just get beat up for no reason. And then the show just goes on and it doesn't get mentioned again. I think a lot of things break down when that type of stuff is treated as just frivolous, you know, frivolous and not worth any kind of attention or ramifications. So I snuck by that.
Particularly when you still use it as part of your storytelling device to try to get heat at a later point. That, you know, so that undercard cuts
yep.
that too. Yeah.
Good point. Yep.
I got some Rampage notes. So for people who want not listen, we did not stay for the main event when we saw it was Lethal and Cash. It was like, we're out. We want to beat the traffic. Opening match was Jay White and Juice versus Sean Spears and Stark. The match started off hot and ended with Jay White hitting the Blade Runner on Sean Spears, and Stark continued fighting them and drove the Bullet Club Gold out. The crowd was actually mixed on Stark. There was a big let's go Ricky, Ricky sucks. So very very split crowd on them. There was they had a promo with the Outcast referring to whatever it was that Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter did on Dynamite, except that was one of the segments that had no audio, so I don't know what they were really responding to. And it looks like Saraya is going to have a match against Willow. So I thought it was a nice touch. They actually all had T-shirts with Britt Baker's face with her black eye on. So I thought it was a nice touch, petty touch for them to have. There were a bunch of CCW chants for the next two matches because it was Dustin Rhodes and Keith Lee versus two CCW guys. And then the match after that was Ashley from CCW against Anna Jay. This one, the end of this one got weird because the lights went out and Julia Hart attacked. Anna Jay then easily fought her off, and, you know, that was it. So don't know what's going on with that. And then it was the Acclaimed with Daddy Ass against a trio of jobbers. That lasted like a minute, and it was all for, you know, gags and stuff. So for the Acclaimed to be in front of the audience, and then the main event was Lethal and Cash. But at that point, we just like no.
Yeah. How many people left before during Rampage?
What did you say, George? Not too many. I want to say
like about a quarter, maybe.
Yeah, like maybe a quarter of them. Like for example, when the show ended, there was a small crowd that left, and you know when Justin Roberts said, "Hey, stick around for Rampage," they're like, "What the hell is a Rampage?"
Yeah, there were some
people.
Oh my god! Yeah, some in our area did not know what Rampage was. So,
what if they said it really fast, like Excalibur? What if they said, "Stick around for Rampage"? Oh, that
well,
show.
I mean, and they also before the show they recorded half of ROH, and then they told us to stick around after Rampage because South Florida is a night city, and we're going to tape the rest of ROH. so there was more stuff after that. The RH stuff was a pure rules match of Lee Moriarty versus Rocky Romero. Rocky Romero won with a submission. Then Athena versus Angelica. Athena won by submission, and then she went after the ref a few times during the match, and went after the ref again after the bell, and then she continued the attack on Angelica after the bell. Then I finally got to see Christopher Daniels and Samoa Joe wrestle each other live.
Oh, wow.
For the wow. Yeah, so that I mean, many years too late, but you know, it was nice. They wrestled for the TV title. One thing that I was kind of like, because I know that Daniels wrestled. Correct me if I'm wrong. Daniels wrestled. Moxley on Rampage, right?
Last Saturday. Yep.
Yeah. And after the match, I think they shook hands, which I thought was like not weird. Same thing happened with Samoa Joe, which makes me think that Christopher Daniels is probably like on his retirement, his retirement leg. So last match with the people he wants to wrestle. That's my thought on that because match ended respectfully between Joe and Daniels.
Well, Chris Daniels has to not say to Samoa Joe in the middle of a promo all those bad things people say about you aren't entirely true, because that's what he said to Mox, and that's what got him beat up.
Yeah. So, and then it was Robbie Eagles versus Claudio Castagnoli, and Claudio won. So, those were the stuff that we saw on ROH. And then I don't know about the stuff after that because we left after the main event.
So, very generic question, and I think it sort of comes across in some of what you're saying. But compared to other AEW events you've attended in person, is this a show that makes it seem like AEW is a, I don't want to overstate the set the bar too high, but kind of this red-hot product, alternate to WWE, has an identity, the fans who are into it are really into it, and it's like, buy the stock, this thing is on the move, or does it have the opposite vibe of a company that's lost some of its, reason for existing. It's skating slow up the ice, like extending our NHL analogies, like they've been on the ice for too long of a shift, and they need to do a line change, or just something kind of in the middle, and it's a good wrestling product, but I don't have a strong feeling either way. Like, what's the vibe you get from attending, given the ability to compare to other live AEW events you've been to?
It feels like a 20 years no marriage, maybe. kind of thing.
That's better than my hockey analogy. Yes. Yep.
really is what it is. People appreciate it and they're there for each other. Maybe some of the spark is not there as often as it used to be. that's kind of what it felt like. Of the shows that we went, there was one previous show that, like, nothing really happened, but the people were really all in on everything that was happening because they were, like, really invested in AEW and also in, like, the roles that the people were in. This one was more like, this was, kind of a nothing show the main event, like, I would have had, I thought I'm probably going to go to all AEW shows whenever they're down here. Had I known that the main event was going to be Takeshita and Kenny Omega versus Blade and the Butcher, I might have had second thoughts.
Yeah, I know.
so that was like, well, what are we doing here?
So what you're saying is that the product needs Cialis.
there's a generic frozen pizza for dinner in the oven for you vibe to this episode.
Yeah, But yeah, that's pretty much, you know, I mean, I'll still go to the next one, but like if they string a couple of them like this in a row, then I'm going to really more question whether I want to or not. I mean, like, I don't want to say that main event was like a killing a town main event, but like, I don't know.
Yeah, I
think there's a lot to say that the people are behind Kenny Omega and are behind the stars, you know, that they have a following, because I don't see how they, if people were in for those, you know, that aspect of it, I think I would say that this would have been like a killing town kind of show.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised by your answer watching tonight's show. I'm not. It feels like a show where a booker is burned out or spread too thin or out of ideas. And, I don't read too much into one show. But, I don't think expanding is the answer right now to how you just described what tonight felt like. I don't think spreading yourself thinner and expanding the hours is the answer. I think making what you're doing better and maybe scaling back a little is key. But I'm curious what tonight's rating is. I'm curious what next week's viewership number is, because sometimes, you know, there's a lag effect. But this was not – it didn't feel like a red-hot show. And like I said, I just think that the faces and heels are kind of miscast. And I don't know. Anyway, I won't – the show's running long.
And
I want to speak in some emails, so –
Yeah, well, and the Rampage, I mean, I haven't been watching Rampage much lately, but this Rampage, I was like, wow, I mean, it was just, there was nothing, there's just nothing drawing me to see Rampage this weekend. I mean, if you watch it regularly, I would call it a chore at this point.
Wow. All right, Javier, anything else you want to add before we sign off here? Or your brother.
No, I think that's pretty much it. George, you have any?
Nope.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in. Thanks for your time. Hope the next show's better, so, you know, you'll keep going. But I understand your feelings.
Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, it was okay, but, you know, not spectacular.
Yeah,
but...
and I mean, you're allowed to have that too. I mean, it's not like the end of the world. It's just that's going to happen sometimes when you're doing 52, you know, 52 shows a year. There's going to be some where it's just things don't fall into place to be a big show. But you know, it's not just that at this point.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Thanks, guys.
All right, good night, guys.
Yep. Drive safe.
Thanks. See ya.
All right, not Excalibur-like, but let's speed through some emails here and see if there's some topics we didn't cover here. Wade Keller podcast at pwtorch.com if you want to participate in future mailbag segments here. Azan in St. Louis says, hey, Tyler and Wade, I noticed a lot of through-line stories on tonight's show with Adam Cole stuff and the Pillar stories. Is this a sign Tony is really thinking about stories better? No, I don't think this is any different than – I don't think he's guilty of not following through on major star level angles, and the Pillar and Adam Cole are major star level angles. Do you agree with that, or do you think this stood out as above normal?
No, I'd agree. I just, you know, my kind of thoughts throughout the night of the WWE comparisons on some things, I think are more prevalent in the last, I don't know, 6 to 8 weeks than they have been in the past. So I don't know what influence caused that sort of change, if it's outside of Tony Khan or someone close to him. But I don't think in the aggregate it's any more, but there's just some different stylistic choices on telling those stories that kind of comp with WWE.
Yeah. Number two, he says, what is your opinion on Aubrey Edwards as a ref? I think she gets in the way sometimes.
Man, I don't know. I mean, not as much as Bryce does, right? I think Bryce Remsburg is the worst person of that. I think there's like a whole thing of him getting in hard camp shots. So yeah. I don't think she's the worst person for that. But yeah, I don't know. I don't have as much issues with refs as other people do either. So take that with a grain of salt.
I don't think referees should very often be part of the storyline. And I think if you want to be a referee, you should be totally content being anonymous. And not famous and not central to storylines and not drawing a lot of attention to yourself. Cause I mean, it really is not about you. And that's not trying to be rude. It's just, you know, if you want to be a manager, Be a color commentator, be a wrestler, be a lounge singer in a completely different industry. But if referees are just there to not draw attention themselves, but make it seem like, you know, there's a semblance of order and structure to things. Number three, do you think Takeshita's on the fast track to becoming something special if the right pieces are falling in the parts? The right places are falling in the parts. I mean, I hope so. You know, him being kind of torn here and is an interesting situation. It has a little bloodline vibe, like Usadayan Jimmy or Jay.